bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere.
Never back off.
With everything you need to know about the association. This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you back again for another week as the Raptors are fresh off a victory on Wednesday night over the Oklahoma City Thunder. And Jonesy, it certainly got a little bit tough, a little bit tense for the Raptors after having a 30-point lead, shaved down to 18 at the half. Then into the third quarter, it was brought down to, I believe, 8. Toronto built it back up to 14. Looked like everything was going to be fine. And all of a sudden, the fourth quarter, twice, the Thunder get it down to 3 before the Raptors ultimately slammed the door shut in one of the ultimate examples of bend but don't break perhaps we've ever seen, as again the 30-point lead got down to 3 and Toronto ultimately wins the game by 9, now sitting just a game short of the halfway point of the season, 40 games into the season, Toronto 26-14 and only 2 games off the pace from last year. And that's, of course, without Kawhi Leonard, without Danny Green, and with major injuries to the lineup for, 75-80% of the season, Jonesy. So certainly an impressive showing for the Raptors, and they're back at it now on Friday night, playing host to the Washington Wizards, and then getting set to head to Minneapolis on Saturday night for the back-to-back against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Sorry, I just got distracted there by a note that came in, so that's a fine for me for having my phone on. So we'll leave that alone, and again I'll pay my fine, I suppose, to the basketball gods, to maybe some local charity. Let's start the show off right now, though. Speaking of the Raptors and all of the injuries, here's a guy who came to the Raptors in the offseason, saw an opportunity to maybe have a fresh start in Toronto after his contract wasn't extended in Brooklyn. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, a free agent, signs a 1-year deal with the Raptors. Then all of a sudden, coming out of camp, wasn't playing a whole ton, wasn't really seeing the floor. Then 7-8 games into the season, the injuries start happening, Jonesy. Opportunity knocks. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson busts through the door and has been a mainstay and a main cog in the lineup now for the last couple of months, and certainly has finally found his role and found his home with Toronto. I had a chance to go one-on-one with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Rondae, this team, other than maybe a handful of games at its full capacity yet, how much do you guys as a squad look forward to kind of now being at this midway point where it looks like, knock on wood here, it looks like everybody's kind of getting back at it, and you guys maybe ready to show what you really got for the second half of the season?
Feels good, you know, just to know that, you know, majority of everybody's back and, you know, working those kinks out. I feel like, you know, when we're all back and healthy, it's like sky's the limit, man. You guys saw how well we play together and how things flourish. You know, Pascal being back, Mark being a great facilitator. It's just, everything could just take off, I feel.
When you're the new guy on the team, does it actually, and not that you obviously want to see a teammate go down, does it help you in terms of getting, you know, the more minutes, the more burn, to be able to acclimate yourself a little bit quicker, perhaps, to a new squad and to new teams?
I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, it's just opportunity, you know. It comes your way in different variations, whether it be from, you know, a team losing or wanting to see something different, or, you know, injuries. You just got to take advantage of the opportunity given. It just so happened that, you know, some guys got injured, and we had that mentality of next man up, and coach believed in us, and the rest was history. We played our way, you know, into earning a little bit of equity in coach's heart, you know, and just trusting us. And I feel like we got to do a better job of, you know, just keeping that. We're not, like, off the hook because we played 10 games well, or whatever the case may be. Nah, we got to grind it out every game, every moment we're on the court.
When you think back to training camp to where we are now, we're a game away from being officially at the actual midway point of the season. Give me some pros and cons of either the team or yourself in terms of where you guys have grown from that camp back in Quebec to where it is now.
I would say just learning each other, you know, learning, you know, where people thrive at, learning, you know, how, you know, the new guys fit into the team system. I feel like that there are a lot of pros in that, just with our veteran, you know, point guard Kyle, Freddie, you know, just putting us in great position to help the team, and then them talking to us as well, you know, showing us and teaching us. I feel like it's a big thing people look over in terms of leadership, like the teaching aspect of it, which we have done a phenomenal job at. And then I feel like the times for us younger guys and the people that are new here is just like, at the end of the day, Coach has been here with these guys, so he's familiar with them, and they built up that trust. So I feel like we got to do a better job of, like, when we're out there for 18 minutes, 20 minutes, we got to stay locked in for that whole time. I feel like once we do a better job at that, things will really start to, you know, keep going up for us.
Based on what you were just saying there, I remember Nick saying in camp, right? I think it was in camp or first preseason game, something like that, where he talked about the new guys, and he was talking about everybody, not singling one person, but, hey, we won a championship last year. Guys got to realize we've established a certain way to play. Was that clear from the get-go in terms of when you came in, like, this is the way the Raptors do things, and you had to kind of figure your way and then find your way?
Just as far as them, how they played and their identity, they knew who they were, you know, and we're coming into something that was obviously established. Definitely was transparent with that. So I feel like everybody, for the most part, knew what they were coming into.
What's it been like for you this first half of the season? I mean, everything you thought it would be when you made the decision to sign with Toronto, or you know, what's your assessment?
You know, at the end of the day, they told me, you know, it would be a grind. It would be some, you know, you have to work for opportunity, playing time, et cetera. So it wasn't nothing I didn't expect. You know, I don't put anything past anyone, any organization. So I'm very open in terms of that. So I just come in and, you know, work hard and do everything that I can do.
Was that a tough decision for you at any point when you think back to the offseason where you're an established guy playing a lot of minutes in Brooklyn, but then you're going to a situation where it might be better, maybe, in terms of going to Toronto, but yet there might be less minutes, and trying to accept that, hey, I'm maybe joining a better situation, a different situation, even if it might come at the expense of a few less minutes?
Yeah, I mean, definitely something tough to adjust to, but at the end of the day, I'm a competitor and I want to win, so that's what the decision came down to. You know, I feel like I was always told with team success comes individual accolades, so I was always, whatever it takes for the team to win, I'm willing to do it. So,
how good do you think this team can be?
I think we can be really good. We can do a lot of special things.
That was my one-on-one with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and as I was chatting with Rondae, Jonesy, you had a chance to go one-on-one with another guy who, with due respect, hasn't necessarily had the same impact or been given the same opportunity, for that matter, as Rondae, but O'Shea Brissett, down at Raptors 905, you know, trying to carve out a role, carve out a niche, suddenly gets called up to the team on a couple of occasions, you know, gets a, you know, mop-up time in sort of end-of-game situations here and there, and all of a sudden, about a month or so ago in Boston, again, with a bunch of injuries and some foul issues in that game, Brissett is given an opportunity to play, comes in late in the third quarter, makes a couple of big plays, ends up getting extended burn in the fourth quarter, and then has been relied upon over the course of the last month or so to play some solid minutes and play a specific role as an energy guy, as a rebounder, as a defender for this Raptor team. And he's also been pretty good at knocking down some three-point shots as well and helping extend the offense and space the floor a little bit. I think probably giving a little bit more than what some fans perhaps might have ultimately expected. This guy can play. And Kyle Lowry has said a couple of times on record, this guy, speaking to Brissett, is going to have a long career in the NBA. That's something coming from Kyle Lowry. We know that Nick Nurse is a huge fan of Brissett's as well. Something to keep an eye on next summer as we talk about Team Canada. We'll get to that later. But again, the sky's the limit for O'Shea Brissett, and he certainly also found a home with the Raptors and in the NBA beyond just Raptors 905. Here's Jonesy, one-on-one with O'Shea Brissett.
O'Shea, let's talk about your role. You're a guy that's always kind of had to sit and wait. Let's go back to Boston. When you got that call on the 28th of December, Nick said he wanted rebounding. He felt your energy and your rebounding can help, and you kind of have come out of nowhere since then. I mean, waiting, preparing, waiting for your chance. What's it like to be sitting there waiting, ready, but sitting there having to wait?
You know, it's kind of weird. You know, everyone wants to get in the game, but you know, now being in the position that I am, you know, I know that it takes time. And it's not just anything that I've been, you know, really thinking about. It's the guys that I'm watching now, you know, Pascal, Fred, Norm. You know, those are guys who've always had to, you know, kind of be in my position, right, kind of wait their turn. And those are, you know, our key guys right now. So watching them has really helped me, you know, stay the course, not really, you know, get too down on myself or wonder why I'm not playing or stuff like that. Just because I know, you know, it takes some time to get to their position.
What have they said to you? I mean, those are some pretty big names that have kind of gone your route, you know, the 905 route, worked at it, waited for their turn, and you're kind of doing the same thing and getting a little bit of a taste now. What have they said to you, or have you kind of sought their advice? And as you said, everybody wants to play, but you know you have to wait your turn.
Yeah, you know, I do more watching than I would, you know, kind of asking questions.
What are you watching for, O'Shea?
Their work ethic. You know, Fred and Pascal, Norm, those guys get in the gym every day. They work out before and after practice. And if, you know, our all-stars are doing that, then why can't, you know, a rookie come in, right, and do the same thing? So that I just see they take no shortcuts. You know, Fred is a guy who, you know, kind of built his whole career on that. You know, not taking any shortcuts. And you know, that's kind of how I want my career to go, the same way. I want everyone to know that I, you know, I've worked for what I have, and I'm going to continue to work to be the, you know, the best I can be.
O'Shea, what do you look for? Anything specific when you're on the bench? You talk about watching and looking. I mean, you kind of know what your strengths are. Nick talks about your energy, your rebounding, you know, making shots here and there, your defense. What are you looking for? What are you watching specifically when you're sitting on the bench during a game, knowing that at any point you could be asked to go in?
Yeah. You know, at first, honestly, I'm not gonna lie, I was just there, you know. I was
like a fan sometimes.
I was just there, you know, not even thinking about getting in the game. But you know, first time coach called my name to go in, I just knew, you know, let me just do what I do. Let me not think too much. Let me just go out there, rebound, and help do little things. But now, you know, knowing how things are going and knowing I could get in the game, you know, I try to watch, you know, who I'm gonna be guarding. And but really, that's it. That's honestly it. You know, I can't, as a rookie, you know, not really playing, you can't go in the game and mess up any type of coverages. So that's my main thing. Going and see who I'll be able to guard and how I'm going to guard them, and just thinking like that. And then, you know, the offensive side will come.
When you look at where you are now, I mean, team's starting to get healthy. Pascal is back. Mark is back. Norm is back. And it's like, you know, I call you guys the energy unit. You, Chris, Rondé, some of you guys might have to kind of take a step back but stay ready. What does that do to your mindset, knowing that you had a little bit of a taste and it could come? I mean, the coach could call on you at any time still, but your mindset with like, okay, we got our main guys back now.
Well, you know, now it's just let's get some wins. You know, Rondé talked to me the other day and he told me, you know, if we get in there, we have to be almost perfect, you know. Yeah. If coach calls on us to put us in, you know, to give you know, our key guys a rest, we can't go in there and make any type of mistakes. So now it's more, you know, locking in and watching film and stuff like that, and focus on winning the game and not just being out there, not just being another body. I actually want to make an impact now, and I'll do what I could do to help, you know, help down the stretch and, you know, get these guys to close out games.
With O'Shea Brissett, rookie forward from the Toronto Raptors. O'Shea, you said something interesting a while back, and we're all very fortunate to be around this game. I mean, you're a budding young player in this league. How much do you find yourself sitting over there watching and saying, like, man, I'm in this game, and so is, you know, Kawhi Leonard, so is Paul George. I mean, you know, we've got the game coming up in March, coming up with LeBron. I mean, how much do you sometimes pinch yourself and say, man, this is where I want to be?
Yeah, you know, almost every day I walk in the gym and I see my name on the back of a jersey, and it's crazy. You know, that's something in itself, just knowing that I'm here and, you know, that I'm able to do what I got to do. I remember last time we played OKC, you know, I texted Shea after the game, and I was like, yo, we really just played against each other in an NBA game. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's every night, it doesn't matter who we're playing. I'm being out there is something that, you know, I've been dreaming about my whole life. And, you know, now that's reality. So I want to keep working. I want to stay here.
What is the welcome to the NBA moment for O'Shea Brissett when you said, dang, I'm here. Like I'm in this fight now, and I know what it's all about. A play on offense, a play on defense, squaring up to guard somebody. What jumped at you and said, man, this is the NBA.
You know, I feel like every game that I've gotten in has been weird. You know, the first time I really got in, you know, I scored against Orlando. Playing the Knicks, playing Iggy, that's someone that I grew up with. You know, guarding CJ McCollum. You know, talking to Bradley Beal before and after the game. You know, stuff like that. It's just little things that keep adding up. But you know, for me, I would feel the first kind of day on picture day. I saw my name on the jersey, and I was like, whoa. You know, this is my hometown, a team that I grew up watching, and you know, my name is on the back of the jersey in the locker room. You know, right beside Kyle Lowry. He's like, this is really happening. It's crazy.
And then, last thing before we go, Shay, this is not an also-ran team. You're not on a team that's struggling. You're on a team that has a banner, still has the trophy now, and is looking to do it again. How much does that appeal to you to be part of that?
That's amazing. You know, like I said, right now, we're all focused on winning, and that's the main key. So now, you know, it feels more real now, and you know, that I'm able to help the guys, you know, get to where we got to be at. And you know, just got to keep winning some games.
Well, Shay, Canada's proud of you, and a lot of people proud of you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That was Jonesy in conversation with O'Shea Brissett. All right, Jonesy, we're going to flip gears a little bit here from the two players, Hollis Jefferson and Brissett, and let's hear from head coach Nick Nurse. This was actually on Wednesday prior to the Oklahoma City game, but we wanted to play some of these comments for you because we found it interesting that on Wednesday morning, the Raptors ultimately waiving Shamori Ponds, then later in the day announcing that they have inked Paul Watson to the two-way deal. So things seem clear with Raptors 905, but it sort of set up an interesting discussion with Nick Nurse about how the Raptors use 905 to feed the main club and just some comments overall on the development league, the G League. But the conversation also turned to how good Oklahoma City's been playing this year, in spite of their loss to Toronto, still the seventh seed in the Western Conference playoff picture and turning a lot of heads with the 1-2 punch of Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, let alone others, as you will hear from Nurse. But also, as it relates to Shai, of course, we can't talk about Gilgeous-Alexander without talking about Canada and the Canadian program. Here is Raptors head coach Nick Nurse.
I know it's not your decision in the end, but you're going to have some input. What are you feeling to do with that two-way spell?
Well, it's those things are interesting, right? And they've become more interesting for us this year with all the injuries. You know, my thing is get somebody in there that can play for us if the need arises. And you can't really sit here and say we need that position or this position. I think we needed them all this year, right? Whatever position the guy can do, and a guy that can hold a role down. Like, you know, take O'Shea for example. Well, he's maybe not had the greatest 905 run. He's been solid there, but when he comes up for us, he plays a role. He defends, he rebounds, and he may stick a shot here and there. So he fits in. And it's kind of one of the tricks with some of those 905 guys or G League guys in general. I don't think there's too many times where you're trying to come up and be the primary scorer, right? You're coming up to try to fit a role, and can you fit in, and can you guard, and can you hustle, and can you pick up things quickly, and not make too many mistakes. So just a good player, best player available still on the board.
Okay. You got Mark coming back. We talked a lot about working guys back in. Is it because of his where he plays and what he does and his experience? Is it a little easier for him to re-enter the frame?
I hope so. I mean, it hasn't been that easy for us re-entering these guys, but it's okay. You know, it's getting them back in, and it'll filter itself out and work itself out as we go here. But I mean, hopefully it'll be okay and fit in. We need some size and rim protection, and certainly his IQ. He's at both ends. He's kind of a bit of a captain, right? He gets us some easy baskets, and he prevents some easy baskets. So it should be nice.
Nick, has it been tough on you as well in terms of trying to find combinations and who to go with? And you know,
well, I wouldn't say it's been tough on me, but it certainly hasn't been easy, right? It's been a challenge without question. It's been difficult, etc. But you know, that's part of the deal. You know, you got to go out there each night, and there's nothing easy in this league, I don't think. Anyway, but when you're moving guys in and out constantly, and trying to keep them organized, and trying to win, and traveling all over the place, you know, it makes it a little tougher. But it's okay. You know, I think it. Hopefully, it's helped me grow a little bit as a coach, which we're trying to do, and hopefully, it'll make me a little better as we go forward.
Like OKC's numbers over the last 15 or so games are a little bit better, but they've taken a big turn. What can you pinpoint to say why they've been playing so well as of late, so consistently?
Yeah. You know, I think I always start probably, Sherm, with Chris Paul. You know, this guy's an elite player in this league. Super smart. I think he keeps them organized. He makes big buckets. And he's a competitor, right? That it's not unlike with Kyle. That stuff oozes out of those guys, and those other guys pick up on it. And I think he can't help himself, right? I mean that in the best way. The ball goes up, and he starts figuring out how to win the game. And he's going to put the effort forward. He's going to make plays. He's going to lead his team. He's going to organize his team, and then you go from there. But And then let's not underestimate Shea's big leap up, again, similar to Pascal in that for us. You know, if you want to keep making comparisons, Steven Adams is as good a big as you need in this league. You know, and you come off the bench with a guy who can get you 15 or 30 in Schroeder every night. So it's a good team, well coached and deep, and it's a good team, period.
What makes Shea so the ability to sort of impact the game so quickly in his career, even last year in LA. I mean, he sort of came in, and he was, every night he was making an impact.
Yeah, he's got a great feel, right? Just tempo-wise, he does things at his own speed, right? And I keep saying his first step's unbelievable, and then he slams on the brakes the last 10 feet and puts it in slow motion. He moves himself around, uses tremendous length and athleticism, makes the right play, he finishes, and he just seems to have great temperament.
You think that unique ability is what separates him from a lot of the other guys, that sort of slow it down and then speed it up? Do you see a lot of that?
Well, I think so. I think there's a lot of guys that can put their head down and go 100 miles an hour, right, and get into the paint and crash into you and do stuff, but I think it is unique that you can go so fast and so slow in the same possession.
That was the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, Nick Nurse. Thanks again to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, O'Shea Brissett, and Nick Nurse for joining us to help kick off the first segment of the show. When we come back, much more on the Toronto Raptors as we have a little mid-season roundtable, myself and Jonesy with Mike Ganter of the Toronto Sun. That's on tap next on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Thanks again to O'Shea Brissett and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson to kick off the first part of the program. You also heard from head coach Nick Nurse. The Raptors 26-14 as we hit the midway point of the season officially in Game 41 on Friday night when the Raptors host the Washington Wizards. The hope is that Fred VanVleet returns either Friday against the Wiz or Saturday when Toronto is in Minnesota on the back-to-back against the Timberwolves. We'll find out. We don't officially know yet when VanVleet will be back, but this is the perfect time now to have sort of the mid-season discussion at the halfway point about the Toronto Raptors season. Myself, Jonesy, with the Toronto Sun's Mike Ganter. Mike, we find out from Nick Nurse on Wednesday night in Oklahoma City. It sounds like Fred VanVleet is going to come back at some point this weekend, either Friday or Saturday, the game against Washington or at Minnesota. Surprise, surprise, here we are now approaching Game 41, the official halfway point, and finally this team looks like they're going to be healthy for the first time essentially all season, or at least dating back to the New Orleans game. Yeah. Do you think we have a sense really of what this team is, given all the injuries?
I don't think we know top end what they are. I know they're better than a lot of people thought they'd be without Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard. I know that for a fact, but I don't know how good they can be. And I think it's pretty high ceiling, to be honest.
Yeah,
I mean, they've shown a lot.
I agree, Michael. they played seven games in one quarter with a healthy team.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle and Serge went down at the end of the first quarter in game eight in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And they haven't had a healthy team since. And as you said, E, we're just getting to the halfway point. I call me crazy, but as presently constructed, with everybody healthy, championship experience, knowing the schemes, guys playing to their full potential, I don't see why this team couldn't win the East again.
No. I mean, let's face it, Milwaukee's better. I mean, I think we can all agree on that. They've got another year beneath their belts. Giannis is taking his game to another level. So to knock that team off is going to be tough. But you're right. It's not that they can't get there. It's just, will they?
Yeah.
They don't have, I mean, obviously, you know, you don't have that game changer in Kawhi. Pascal started to show signs that he was on his way to that level. I mean, he's starting from scratch again. I mean, he didn't.
Yeah, and that's a question. Yeah. Can he do it in April, May, and June? Yeah. Kawhi's proven that he can. People are still looking for, and that was always a question before. Could Kyle do it in April, May, and June? Could DeMar do it in April, May, and June? Well, who does it now in April, May, and June? Or, as I think, do they have enough collectively for a different guy to do it on each night at that high level? Because there's no Atlantas and Sacramentos and people like that in the playoffs. Do they have somebody, or could they cobble it together collectively to be able to do it? That's possible.
Well, and that's why I think home court's going to be so important for them and where it stands now. And again, we still have half a season to go, but you know, Jonesy and I, we were walking the other day back from shoot around in OKC, and I was saying, you know, you look at those, the three of the last four, again, heading into the Thunder game for the Raptors, where they had double-digit leads in the fourth quarter, lost to the Thunder, lost to Portland, lost the other night to San Antonio as well, losing three games by a total of 4 points. That's the difference right now from the Raptors being, again, going into the Thunder game at 25-14 versus 28-11, which would have them in second spot,
which
is crazy.
And this gets back to what we were talking about before. They haven't been healthy, so we don't really know yet. We don't know how good they can be. And I have high expectations for this team. I think they're gonna surprise people in the playoffs. I wouldn't sit here right now and tell you that I think they can knock off Milwaukee. I think there's a chance. I think it'll be a lot tougher than it was last year.
Yeah, I'd like to see that seven game series, to be honest. And now we're coming to a point where we sit now, and the trade deadline's right around the corner.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you don't really know what you have, and therefore you don't really know what you need. Might need.
Yeah.
Exactly. To make a deal, and if you sit tight, then this is your team, and you're looking at maybe somebody off the waiver wire or a late cut or something like that. But what kind of quality are you going to get there in terms of? I mean, you might find a guy, you never know, a buyout. But at the same time, I think it puts Masai and Bobby. I think it puts them in a difficult spot.
Well, it's got to be tough as well when you figure you're the defending champs who lost a superstar in Kawhi, who have three marquee free agents coming up in the offseason in Gasol, Ibaka, and Van Vliet. Yet, again, you're a couple of games away from being 28-11. You're still a top four seed.
Yep.
You still at least currently have home court. And here's at least three guys, for what our opinions are worth, talking about they still have a chance to potentially win the East. Yet, you could do nothing, Jonesy, make no moves, but then lose all three guys in free agency, or two of the three, and then have nothing to show for them. And does that hurt your development going forward, that you didn't get something while you could? It's a lot of moving parts. And I'm not advocating making a trade. I'm saying there's just so much going on that it's a bit of a roll of the dice. You stick with your core and it works, and you make it back to the finals, or you at least make the conference finals. You don't do anything and you get bounced in the first round, and man, we could have used somebody. And then all of a sudden guys walk. It's really kind of this game of roulette right now.
Yeah. Michael's itching to talk. I'll wait till he's
Well, done. I was just going to say, I mean, that was like last year, right? I mean, Valanciunas, I mean, nobody wanted to see him go. But, I mean, that move, if they don't make that move for Marc Gasol,
they don't win. Yeah.
So, I mean, all eyes are on Masai right now and Bobby, and what are they going to do? And you're right, I don't know the answer. I don't think anybody knows the answer other than maybe those two. And I'm not sure it's on a day-to-day, the answer doesn't change for them.
I'm going to take your word there, Michael. No. What you do know is this team has great potential when healthy. And I think the devil you know is better than the devil you don't.
Yeah.
And if it were left to me and I was in that management position, I might look for a small tweak that doesn't really disturb any of my top eight or nine. You know, I might make a roster move. I might pick a guy up off the waiver wire or the buyout market. But I would go forward with this team because I think you have a better idea to know what you have with this group than you do when you bring somebody in, because you've only got less than half the year then to figure it out. Marc Gasol was one guy who understood how to play. Nick saw him fitting in perfectly into the system. And if you make a deal with any of those expiring contracts now, I think you lessen your chances because those guys are part of your core.
Yeah.
I would be prepared, and people will howl at this, I would be prepared to go forward with what I have. I might lose two or three guys at the end of the year, but I know I took my best shot with what I had with experienced players.
And you've got, I mean, like Marc Gasol is the exception to the rule. There's not too many guys you can bring in and will be willing to sacrifice all of their game in order to fit in. And I believe he sacrificed quite a bit of what he, I mean, yeah, he was a scorer.
Totally,
in Memphis.
Totally. Michael, three guys in the last, since like 1990, there have been three trades at the deadline where the teams made a trade and won the championship. The Rockets traded for Drexler.
Right.
The Pistons traded for Rasheed Wallace. And the Raptors traded for Marc Gasol. You don't hit that often.
Yeah.
You're pretty much going forward with what you have if you're going to win. And I'm a proponent of that right now.
Now, okay, I want to bring up two separate questions here now. And not to be negative, but to kind of look at the big picture as well. You brought up the names Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri. Factored into all this, of course, too, is for whatever reason, Masai Ujiri hasn't been signed yet to an extension. Yeah. He could be entering the final year of his contract, too. And now the president is helping orchestrate the future of the team that we hope and assume he's going to be a part of. It seems like a no-brainer for the Raptors, for MLSE to lock him up, but unless he has visions of something else. So there's that underlying factor to the whole thing, too, in terms of you want to get that situation, that contract resolved before you're moving forward. And again, I'm looking into the offseason, whether you win the championship or not. There's a lot of moving parts. That's something, Jonesy, you and I have discussed in previous shows, but we've got Mike here, and I wonder what you think.
I'll say this to that. Larry Tannenbaum was approached at, I think it was the NHL Board of Governors meeting by Mike Tracos of the National Post. And Larry said, look, you don't have to worry about Masai. Masai is doing what Masai is doing, and he's going to be doing it for us. I have not believed a single story out of New York, probably ever. These guys are just, it baffles me that they keep thinking people would want to go and work with James Dolan. I mean, until Dolan leaves, I don't think anybody who has options and has a decent option is going to leave that good option to go and work there. I just don't see it. I don't see it at all.
All right, the other one I wanted to bring up and to bring it back to on the court, again, whether you end up, I was going to say whether you win the championship, this directly impacts it. Mm-hmm. Because of the losses that they've had during all of these injuries as well, forget whether it's 25-14 or 28-11 or whatever else, of the 11 or 14 losses, it wasn't just Oklahoma City, Portland, and San Antonio. It's been Boston, Miami, Philadelphia. Toronto has lost Indiana, lost a number of games already to teams that they're trying to jockey with, and as tight as it is in the East, they're kind of behind the eight ball already in a lot of tiebreak scenarios, a lot of head-to-heads, and if it stays as jammed as it is, as nice as it is here in the middle of January to be in the fourth spot, you might be in the fifth or sixth spot because you're going to drop because of tiebreaks if you don't start picking up some of these games now in the second half of the season.
I agree. That's a great point. I will say this, however. This has been a good road team the last 5-6 years. I mean, they have the third longest consecutive playoff streak in the NBA. And I think they're the type of team that, with what they learned in the championship run, I think they can win on the road if they have to. It's not a great proposition to be playing Game 7 on the road, but I think they can do it, for one. And who knows? Maybe they steal a game early. I mean, look at Milwaukee series last year. People were giving them up for dead, and all of a sudden they win and they finish it, close it out in six at home. So, I think maybe with what they have, they might be able to get away with it.
And this team is due for a run of health. I mean, it's like they've had their issues all year. I'm really curious to see what this team can accomplish when they're healthy. And if they can sustain it for, you know, the second half, then, you know, maybe you get back all those games. They've done a great job to keep their head, or to stay where they're at, in my opinion. just because of all, like, these aren't small injuries. These are big injuries. These are Fred VanVleet. These are Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka, Pascal Siakam. Like,
core
these
guys.
Are your, these are your guys. Yeah. And they have somehow managed to stay within reach of the Bostons, and even Milwaukee might be getting away, I think, from everybody else. But Boston's still there, Philadelphia, Miami. And, I mean, it's going to be – the second half is going to be good. I'd just like to see them do it healthy.
All right, I'm going to end it on this. We're at the halfway point. I think we can all agree that for the Raptors, if we hand out the awards, the rookie of the year, for what it's worth, Terrence Davis has been the best of the young guys. No disrespect to Matt Thomas, who also missed almost 20 games himself. But to me, it's interesting when you factor in now all of the injuries that this team has had with, as you just noted, Mike, so many core key star guys missing 10-plus games, almost all of them. Who's the MVP? Who's the midseason MVP for the Raptors?
Right now it's Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, I would go with Kyle. I tell you, Serge has had a great run lately, too. There's a name that might, I mean, everybody's had, to Mike's point with Kyle, everybody's had a piece because not everybody's been healthy. It's been Kyle for a while. It's been Serge for a while. It was Pascal early in the year. It's hard, and I think that's going to shake out as we turn for the wire here.
That was Mike Ganter of the Toronto Sun. Again, we will remind you that the game on Friday night against Washington, you can hear it right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And then Saturday, the Raptors in Minnesota, you can see that game on Sportsnet television. Fred VanVleet expected to return in one of those games. We're not sure if it will be on Friday or not until Saturday. So keep it tuned right here or follow us both on Twitter, Eric_Smith, Paul_Jones, and we will get the information to you as quickly as possible. One last break. When we come back, we'll shift our attention to the Western Conference and a team that is trying to, well, put themselves in the history books. We'll talk about the San Antonio Spurs next on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to the Good Show podcast with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We wrap up the show a little bit earlier in the week. Jonesy had a chance to go one-on-one with the radio voice of the San Antonio Spurs, Bill Schoening, who spoke a lot about how the Spurs are hoping to stay in the annals of history in the NBA. It would be 23 straight years in the playoffs. They've already tied the record. Can they set the new record by making it to the playoffs this year? They're on the outside looking in as we speak, but barely. They are right in the thick of it. Could they slide into the 8th or the 7th? Can they stay afloat in the West? How far can LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan take them? Those questions and many more, as again, I chatted earlier in the week with Spurs radio voice Bill Schoening.
Bill, you were saying to me just a couple moments ago off mic here that kind of been an up and down season, but yet you still look down and there's San Antonio. Forget the record. Still looking at a playoff spot and looking to keep the streak alive. And to me, that makes them, I know we still have half the season to go, but still a dangerous option with the experience factor and just with the pedigree of this team.
Yeah, there's no question about the fact that the guys on this roster know how to win. I mean, and the organization has been winning for so long that it's just expected that you're going to be in the playoffs every year. 22 straight now, which is it ties an all-time record, and if they get it this year, it'll be their record by themselves. It was the Philadelphia 76ers, Syracuse Nationals, by the way. That's how far you got to go back. I think the last year was 70 or 71, so it's been a record that's been intact for a long time. So I think in San Antonio, we kind of take this team for granted a little bit because they've been winning for so long. So this year, really the first year in my 19th season that they've struggled, especially the defensive end. Last year, they weren't a consistent team either. But this year, the one thing they really lack is consistency. They've shown glimpses of really good stuff. They dominated Milwaukee in the second game. They played Milwaukee. They took care of Boston on the road, which is an impressive win. Then the next night or next game, they struggle against Memphis. So, you know, it's been up and down.
Why do you think that is?
It's hard to tell. Defensively, they're not good every night. I think offensively lately they've been very good. They're shooting the three a lot more. They're hitting the three more. They're moving the ball very well. Offense is not the problem. That wasn't why they lost to Memphis the other night. Memphis out-hustled them on the boards. They outscored them 27-7 in second chance points. They beat them down the floor several times for fast break points. So I think that the team wasn't as physical defensively as it needed to be in that Memphis game. I think that's one of the things I'm going to look forward to seeing as the season progresses, if they can get a little bit better defensively, because offensively they're okay.
Is this just kind of a natural thing, though, in a sense where, you know, and I know I'm sure it's gotten sort of an old hat for you, or you're even more talking about it, but when you think about Duncan and Ginobili and Parker, and now it's the next wave, and right. even though Pop's still there, it's trying to, you know, trying to stock the cupboard again and stay relevant, stay, you know, in the conversation while restocking the cupboard. Is that, or is that too simplistic?
Sure. Well, yeah, it's like which way do you want to go, in a way, because I think that they still feel like they're relevant.
You know, yeah.
I think they feel like they can still win a playoff series and get to the playoffs, but a lot of it does depend on the development of some of these young guys. You know we got Aldridge, we know we got DeRozan, you know what you got with those guys, but sometimes young players aren't consistent, and that's been part of the problem, is the consistency of this ball club, especially, like I said earlier, at the defensive end. But we've got some very good, promising young players. Lonnie Walker IV is very athletic, but he just turned 21, and he's only, you know, he spent most of last year in the G League, so yeah, he has a long way to go, but, you know, he's showing flashes of what he can be. Derek White, I think, came on really strong last year for the Spurs. Bryn Forbes, a guy who was undrafted, yet he can shoot the ball very well. He's been a little streaky this year, but yeah, he's a guy that I think is very capable of shooting 40% from three-point range for an entire season and doing it a number of times. So I think that they've got some good young pieces in place. DeJounte Murray, of course, is an excellent defensive guard. Still has ways to go in his offensive game, but he's only 23. So they got a lot of good young pieces that they can build around for the future.
I always hesitate to ask questions like this because I know what it's like when somebody asks me. You're not the GM, you're not the president, you're not pulling the strings, but what do you think in terms of how this thing moves forward as well when you start talking about some of the veteran guys, contracts, who doesn't come back, who you're signing, et cetera?
It's really hard to tell, first of all, because the Spurs are one of those teams that really keep it close to the vest.
Oh, I know that real well.
Most teams do, and rightfully so. So I think a lot of it might depend on where this team goes.
Yeah.
You know, if this team all of a sudden starts struggling and it looks like it's not going to make the playoffs, then maybe they have to make a decision about, you know, which direction they're going to go. But if they continue to play well, and right now, like I said, they're up and down, but if they're vying for a playoff spot and you've got, you know, a guy like Aldridge and a guy like DeRozan lead the way, and maybe some of these young guys come on, you could fight for a better seed, perhaps. I could see that happening because, you know, Pop's one of the great coaches of all time, and he's got these guys, I think, headed in the right direction right now. So just a matter of pulling it all together. But they're, like I said, there are a lot of good young pieces that they've got. So I think the future's bright.
From your perspective, where do you think he's at, Pop, in terms of how much he's still into this, and how you know, are the juices still flowing for him in terms of coaching?
I think so, and of course he's coaching the USA Olympic team too, so that's part of it. So I think that you know, if he didn't have the energy to keep going, he wouldn't have taken on such a huge task as coaching the Olympic team, and he had took up his whole summer last year as they qualified. So I think that he still has a passion for coaching. I think he likes seeing the development of some of these young guys. I think he's going to be around for a little while longer.
All right, next one I have for you, I want to go back a couple of minutes. You talked about the San Antonio fan base. One of the things that we spoke about here in Toronto at the end of last season, Raptors win their first ever championship, and this might sound funny because it's only one championship here as opposed to the multiple rings that the Spurs have, but it's trying to keep that fan base engaged and not to be bored by greatness. Oh, well, we won the championship, so anything short of the championship now, we're not interested in. I think it changed a little bit maybe for the fans here in Toronto in that with Kawhi Leonard leaving, there's now suddenly the reigning champs are the underdogs again. And I think a lot of people in Toronto have kind of taken on that mentality. How do you think the Spurs fans have gotten over that over the years where, you know, it's still good to make the playoffs? And while you don't want to be bounced in the first round, hey, you still made the playoffs. Maybe you made it to round two. Maybe you made it to the conference finals. But it doesn't always have to be championship or bust, and the year is a bust if you don't win the title.
Well, I think it's different because the Raptors have always rebranded, right, without Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, even though some of the main pieces are coming back from that team, it's a different team. Where the Spurs are basically the same team for years and years. You remember in 13 they lost the finals to Miami, and they purposely brought that exact team back. Everybody came back from that team to try to avenge that loss. That's exactly what they did. But it was the same team. So, you know, you had Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan together for all those years. So here it's different because the guys that were, you know, two of the main guys, any of them were part of the team, left, and now you've got the other guys coming in. I think this is still a really good basketball team. I'm anxious to see how it works when they're all healthy because, as you know, they've been struggling a little bit with injuries.
We didn't see the Spurs the last 8 weeks of the regular season, roughly-ish, let alone, obviously, in the playoffs. And I'm talking about from a Toronto perspective. What was reaction like late in the season when the Spurs fans, because obviously there was a lot of talk when we played in San Antonio when the Spurs came here about Kawhi and his exit and whether people liked what he did or not or whatever. But suddenly now the Raptors make the playoffs and they win round one and they win round two and they're in the conference finals. Suddenly they're in the NBA finals, then they win the title. How did the Spurs fans and former Kawhi Leonard fans react to seeing him win elsewhere?
Well, I'm sure that they were pulling against him, not necessarily pulling against Toronto, because they felt hurt. Here's a great young player that was really coming into his own, had already won the finals MVP at the age of 22, for goodness sake. And then, you know, that whole thing happened. So I think that, the fans to this day, and I don't know that I agree with it necessarily, but, you know, they boo every time he touched the ball in an LA Clippers uniform. So it had nothing to do with the Raptors. Yeah. It's just where he was. So hopefully at some point the fan base will mature to the point where they don't have to boo the guy every time he touches the floor. He did some great things for the Spurs. He clearly was thinking about going elsewhere, and then that's what happened.
It's interesting because it's almost there, you could find some parallels, at least from a Toronto perspective, to what it was like with Vince Carter. When Vince ultimately left, now granted he was traded as well as Kawhi was, but it's come full circle to the point where it was now 6-7 years ago, I think, roughly at least, where he got the hero's welcome. And the fans, for the most part, have generally forgiven him. Now he comes to town, he gets the standing ovation, he gets the video tribute, and it's certainly a completely different story with DeMar, where he was loved last year, and the reception that he got on Sunday was equally as big, and he's still a guy that most Raptor fans look at still as a Raptor for life.
Sure, and I can see why DeMar had such a great relationship with the fans. He's a great guy. I had a chance to talk to him just the other day before the Memphis game, and it's hard when you kind of grow up in a city like he did in Toronto, and part of the culture here, and it's got to be difficult for, you know, sometimes we don't, as broadcasters or as fans, you know, we don't think about, you know, we just think about the player who makes millions of dollars, doesn't think about how it affects him from a personal standpoint, having to pick up his family and move somewhere else.
That was the radio voice of the San Antonio Spurs, Bill Schoening. Thanks again to Bill, also to Raptors head coach Nick Nurse, Mike Ganter from the Toronto Sun, and O'Shea Brissett and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson of your Toronto Raptors. For Paul Jones and our entire production crew, I'm Eric Smith. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.